Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport, the record book.
Hello again and welcome to the latest edition of the Game Day, the record book podcast. Myself, Danny Kelly, and my assorted and esteemed gang of guests, who I'll tell you about later. You pretty much know what happens here now. I am keeping an actual physical paper book, the record book, of all the best performances, worst performances, heroes and villains of the season so far. And they're chosen today by myself and, of course, legendary broadcaster. I remember he was DJing, Mark Webster. Hello, Mark.
Hello. Good evening to you, Dan. Thanks for remembering that.
And the former Charlton Athletic forward, these days a coach back at Charlton Athletic, of course, works with England as well at various levels, which means he's very successful because England now dominating the world at most
things. we own it.
Jason Yule, that's not an exaggeration, is it, Jason?
I can say I've contributed probably just a little bit. But
I'm not wrong. Our boys, particularly the boys and young men age groups, we're the power in the world, aren't
we? I think the new thing coming out of the FA now is where we're now being chased instead of being the chasers. So that's now a good turnaround in terms of English
language.
Well played, Jason.
So well done with being both a coach at Charlton Athletic, are on their way up as well, and England's younger group. So and very commiserations on your career coming to the point where you're having to take part in this podcast.
Tragic.
We start with a performance of the week.
De Bruyne now pressing forward. He picks up the ball. Right, but it's shot. And that is number 8. And that is pure Kevin De Bruyne.
Well, it was a lovely day, lovely result, and a good performance. But after 1-0, we gave them 2 chances to score 2 goals. And they didn't do that, and we did it. So what could I say? 5 shots on target, 5 goals.
Can they bite back at all of those critics and go on to win this game from a position of some adversity? 3 yards outside of the penalty area, central position. Aubameyang scores! Arsenal 3, Aston Villa 2. This remarkable comeback has been completed by the 10 men of Arsenal.
Together, we play with more with the heart, the second half, because we needed that.
I'm going to let you start, Jay, so people can get used to your voice and your views. But I suspect, because I know who you support, this may be one of the most biased performances of the week of all time. Who have you chosen?
I've gone for Arsenal.
Biased? Good Lord, yes. Good Lord. How could this have happened?
No, I've gone for Arsenal today in terms of what we saw last week at Watford and then today being 1-0 up, wasn't it? I'm getting all confused.
Yeah. 1-0 up. Aston Villa were winning.
Then there's a sending off down to 10 and then all of a sudden they're still winning and you just think to yourself, it's just same old Arsenal.
Yeah.
That's what you're thinking.
The normal narrative is that this Arsenal team will not have the cojones to pull this around, and yet they did.
And they did. And surprising to me at one point where I was looking at the TV in a clubhouse after a game today, cursing with a fellow Arsenal man next to me and Johnny Jackson, and I'm happy to say his name.
Two Charlton, Exeter, and Arsenal.
Yeah, hang on, yes. But Jack, you're bad enough. You're from south of the river and you support Arsenal. Jackson's worse, isn't he? He played for Spurs while having a massive Arsenal tattoo on his ass. Has he ever shown you that?
No, I've not seen. I'm not going to ask him either. But,
good luck, Jason. Well played.
But we were very disappointed at the time, but then within the drive from the game to seeing it turn around, and I just thought, yes, they've got a little bit all
now,
of a sudden.
Now, bear in mind, Jason, that I was born and brought up in Islington, that everybody I love supports Arsenal, all my family, my missus is a season ticket holder over there, everybody I know, and yet I have to say, having worked with him, I've never met anybody more fanatical about Arsenal than Johnny Jackson, the former Charlton captain. He's literally insane about them, isn't he?
He is. And the thing is, he's the one who's actually getting the little cult thing going at the club as well. Because there's a few Arsenal boys in the change room, but he's sort of like the cult leader of it.
Wow.
So from when the journey and me in the car coming over. And there was a voice message, and it was like, Ooh to be. It was just like, yes. And
it's getting a bit Columbine, this, isn't it, really? At some point, I'm sensing a compound at some point.
No, and
police outside. And
yeah,
but how often can we do that as Arsenal fans?
Well, okay, yeah.
All of a sudden, it's a case of you're looking at another bad week. And then all of a sudden it's like, yes, there's actually something to be proud of for once.
You hit the nail on the head there, Mark, as so often. Because if you... David Koresh at Waco is only as interested in the second coming as Johnny Jackson is in Arsenal. the intensity is every bit as real.
Oh,
you know?
It's all there. I can't. You've got credit where credit is due, though. Is Unai Emery was absolutely on the end of another pounding, and he's being given zero interest in being given time to try and turn the team around. And he's talking about identities. And trust me, lads, we're playing out from the back. It's the way forward. So there's so many things we're against them.
Are we?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Are we, boss?
How does that quite work, Governor? But you know, and so they take on a Villa side that's got a lot about them. And not only that, but they're actually winning the game several times.
No, yeah. And that's the thing where you look at it and think it's the team that's just come up and you're losing 2-1 and you just think, no, not us. Like, why have we got to be that team that's losing to a newly promoted team?
Yeah.
On our own patch, down to 10 men. It is exactly like
it's
that.
It's our tune with Jason Yule.
But no, right. It's fair play.
Enough, Jason. We know. Arsenal, great. It's fantastic and all the rest
for
of
now,
it.
For now, for today.
I'll choose.
Danny's taking it very well.
I'll have to choose. Well, actually, there was so much brilliant football on the Sunday that what Spurs did at Leicester has been kind of swept under the carpet. So, that's all very good. Look, this is going to sound a little bit... we try and avoid the more obvious highways and byways on Game Day, the Record Book podcast. But I have to say, it would be dereliction of duty if in a week when a team has scored 8 in the Premier League, they weren't in the performance
it's
of the
fair
week.
Point. It's a fair point.
So I'm going to go for Manchester City, but there's a special reason for going for Manchester City. I loathe, hate and abominate teams who get 3 up at home and then declare.
Yeah.
I like a team who go... I mean, you can tell me, Jason, I mean, with your professional head on, what's so shameful about going on and absolutely smashing the opposition under your heel? Now, of course, Watford, talk about there for the taking, and I will talk about them later in the show when we get on to the worst performances. But Manchester City, they score early, they score often, and then they don't let up. They 5-0 at half-time. We've seen already once this season a 5-0 lead becomes the final score. Why do professionals not want to get double figures?
I don't think it's not wanting to. It's like the attitude or mentality changes, where it's okay. Well, we've got this game won. It's fine. And like
is
you said,
game management.
Well,
that disgusting. Just,
yeah, but
it's a long season.
Yeah, but some of it is sometimes lack of game management. But in terms of the way Man City saw it, as it was like we talk about goal difference, where Watford bottom of the table, worst goal difference. It's that's like an extra point. So that goal difference in terms of what Man City achieved yesterday, that could actually be
vital at the end of the season. It's a simple piece of pragmatic football,
isn't
it?
So it's go and, yes, it's 5-0, but the game's not over. You've still got 45 plus extra injury type. Go and get as many goals as you can, but ultimately, you don't want to concede. That's the worst
thing
as well.
You want nil, don't you?
You want the nil. And I think the conversation would have been a lot different if it was a one, regardless of...
Dan, you know this because you're an NFL fan. Is that they do this thing called running up the score, in which they've come up with some kind of conceit in which it's wrong and nasty and bad to bully the opposition who are doing so poorly.
No.
And let's not forget that this finger was being pointed at the US women's football team in the World Cup.
That's right. Yeah,
for daring to enjoy scoring goals and celebrating when they do, which I thought was an atrocious.
No, it's terrible.
What Jason says is absolutely right. Because I remember, I think the last time a team got 9 in the Premier League, Spurs got 9 against Wigan. I mean, so bad that Wigan's left back, Edson, who had previously played for Spurs, they tore his contract up in the dressing room afterwards, didn't they? Jermaine got 5, but they scored a goal. And the goal that the Wigan got was a handball. It's distinctly a handball.
No,
I'm still niggling about it 10 years later.
Funny. Never enough, is it?
No, never enough. Right, and if Jason Yule could be accused of hometown bias with his idea of the performance of the week, Mark, you had your claret and blue scarf.
Welcome to One Eye Town.
Your little bubble hat on and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
As performances go, you'll have to convince me that West Ham was performance of the week because I had them down to win that game because I think they're a better team than Manchester United.
Well, that's pretty reasonable, and perhaps my personal bias can work to my advantage here because I am still a fan sitting 4 rows from the front watching West Ham playing Man United.
Yeah.
Nothing in my DNA says, oh, it's a little 2-0 win here because
it's easier for me,
things don't happen. And so just to be in a situation where, and that this was not Man United's best 11, and this is also not Man United's best era. Let's be brutally honest.
But in my opinion, and you can tell me I'm right or wrong here, this is West Ham's best team for 2 generations.
And this is where I am of crossing everything and touching every...
You don't want to believe it, but it's true.
But you still have to beat the team in front of you or the players in front of you.
There you go,
that's
Jason.
The thing. So it's always easy to go and criticise, well, it wasn't Manchester United's strongest team. But if you're at Man United, you are there because you're a good player. And you should be there, in theory, going and beating a team like West Ham.
What about the psychology of these teams? Manchester United, when they used to run out, now of course the team I support wears a white shirt, so they always turned up at White Hart Lane in a red shirt, black shorts, black socks. They looked like what they were, the devil incarnate coming to eat you.
And red's officially the most dominant colour in all of sport.
So when they pitch up today at the London Stadium,
lovely
wearing shirts.
What colour was that?
I know exactly what colour it is.
Go
it's
on.
The colour of old lady support hose.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And how can you win a football match in old lady stockings?
It's good for the varicose veins, bad for your
it's
performance.
Good for deep vein thrombosis.
Exactly right.
No,
they must have had a long journey there. That's why they had them on.
What's the most ridiculous kit you've had to wear? Surely Charlton back in the 90s had some shockers.
No, I think, do you know what it was? Just the size of the shirts.
You were
Yeah, it was some baggy numbers. I know, obviously, now it's about the tight fit and air cool and be cool and all that, but just the size of the shirts.
Yes.
It works both ways because, of course, Andy Reid is a friend of this show and he had the opposite problem getting a shirt.
Never baggy enough. No. But you're actually right. For West Ham to beat Man United's side, full of, really good Manchester United player names, albeit some of them nudging their past, you know, their sell-by date, it would seem, and to beat them while they're wearing the colour, it's never been used as a colour before, bandage.
Mm-hmm.
So I will take that.
Right.
Hence, performance of the week.
Okay, Jason, what we do now is we decide between the three of us. You went for Arsenal, I've gone for Manchester City, though I think you'd been better if they got 10. and Mark somehow thinks that West Ham beating a load of old ladies in bandages is the performance of the week. You still sticking with Arsenal?
Yeah. I'm going with, definitely. Yeah.
I'm going to ask you, have you changed your mind at all?
I'm content in myself. I'll accept that on my own behalf as being my performance of the week. But I can kind of see, we're talking about two teams bouncing back in a weird and wacky way in Arsenal, Man United, the Arsenal one feels more important.
I think it does because, as I say, they were a team who were being accused of missing an absolutely vital part of the male anatomy, and perhaps today they have found them, because it is, of course, plural. Therefore, I will go for Arsenal Football Club, even though the very words make me feel like I'm swallowing something hard and jagged.
Who's that again? What team?
The other team in North London.
Oh, you're not a nice man, Jace.
Woolwich Ramblers. they are our performance of the week.
The Record Book.
Well, that's it. And there are boos once again from the Newcastle supporters. Another home game without a victory at the start of the season. And the fans voted with their feet. The lowest crowd here for a Premier League game for 7 years.
We all know how difficult the Premier League is. You know, Brighton have been in it and have had a change of manager and a change in philosophy, they're a decent side, proved a decent side for the last few years.
Their best point from Watford's point of view, they don't have to come back here in the Premier League again. Full-time, Manchester City 8, Watford 0.
It's 3 points. Yeah, there are 3 points. It's the same distance. It's sometimes hard more when you have some options and you lose the match. We didn't have any chance with this match.
Moussa! 2-0, Sheffield United! Fantastic finish! Lys Moussa opens his account for Sheffield United, and that surely must be a first win away from home in 13 Premier League games for Sheffield United.
Now it's time on the Game Day Record Book podcast with Jason Yule, Mark Webster, myself, Danny Kelly, to turn the page over from a very close race for Performance of the Week. I think it'll be equally well contested, and I love this section, for the worst Performance of the Week, because footballers, I'm afraid, Jason, I'm not used to being called out. Here, we very much do. And particularly in a team sport, the Worst Performance of the Week award, I think, is the very high point of the show in many ways. Mark, why don't you start? I think you've got a team from the north of England you want to focus on.
I have indeed, and I just think it was their, and as much as it was because surely it was their moment. Surely there's a chance here, you know. And I'm talking about Newcastle United. I mean, and Brighton, I think, and Graham Potter are going to do really good things, and they're certainly going to be entertaining while they do it. And I'd like to see him hang around in the Premier League, because I think Chris Hughton did a wonderful job in the way he did it, and Graham Potter's doing a different way of doing it. Newcastle, of course, have got different. They've got a different story to tell. They got they're fiddling with a different bow, and Steve Bruce decides, I think for the third time, to jack in a really good job to take up what he thinks is a better job. This time around, it's because how could I say no? It's Newcastle. They're my team. I'm going to give him that one again.
Just for the... And he does get a little bit of a pass on that. It reminds me of that when he did this before, when he was trying to get out of Crystal Palace,
yeah.
Simon Jordan, very much my co-host on so many shows over there on Talk Sport, said to him, right, you... and they're great mates, by the way. I'm putting you on gardening leave. Steve Bruce, genuinely thought... He said to him, what, I have to do your garden? He genuinely thought that he'd have to work in Simon's garden.
I could Steve Bruce attend Simon Jordan's shrubbery would be something I would pay more money. I'll tell you what I'd do. The 13,000 Newcastle fans who didn't turn up to watch him play against Brighton would probably go and do that. Simon Jordan's herbaceous boulders are much more attractive.
And that was the start of the performance of the worst performance of the week, in that this club, which prides itself on filling that 52,000-seat stadium, nothing like that.
You had the defence, and here's the defence. First of all, you can't... People do this a lot with fans. They'll point at the finger saying, you fans are terrible. And they're pointing at the people who've turned up, which is stupid. 43,000 people still turned up.
Yes.
That's not a bad turnout.
But that is the love.
Well, considering what they're watching.
And that's just more like... Yeah. But it's the love for the club.
Exactly.
Regardless of what they're watching, yeah.
But what they were given was 27% possession.
At home, by the way.
To Brighton, who got... And I know stats are not everything. I'll tell you what, though. I think they tell a bit of a story in this one. 700 touches in relation to something like 200 Absolutely Newcastle have offered nothing. And I include... Wheeling Andy Carroll out.
I was going to say,
God bless him.
With all due respect to a player who, when he was 20, I thought, wow, this fella is an absolute monster.
Unplayable footballer.
Der Ungeheuer, as the Germans say, a monster. But now, the thought of Andy Carroll, let's be fair, is dragging his old bones around the football world. I presume he's playing on a no disrespect to him, it must be on a pay-per-play contract. Huge applause when he comes onto the pitch. If that's where Newcastle United have got to, I'm not sure they're going to survive this season.
To the chant of he's one of our own and he barely ever played for him. But of course, yeah, he's local, but you'll cling on to anything.
And the thing is when you look at the picture as well at Newcastle, where it's Steve Bruce coming home, quote, then it's Joel Linton, record signing, or yes, it's cost X, but hasn't really got a great goal scoring record. But then you expect him to be great because he's at Newcastle. And then you've got
He's got the number nine on.
Got the number nine, it's even more weight on his shoulder. And then you've got some other okay players in and around it with sort of no idea of or identity or way of playing. It's, you're looking going, well, there's your 27% possession.
Yes.
Because it's, yes, well, who's actually going to get us to 30, 35, 40, 40 yeah, and actually look like we're going to go and score a goal? So it's more the fans are there for the club, but it's more clinging on that little bit of we might even get a chance or a shot at goal, let alone actually score and win a game.
It was virtually like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it is all about perception as well, because when Benitez was there, if they had a very bad home performance and got a point, then he's a tactical genius.
Yeah.
Oh, we wouldn't have got that point under any other manager. Yet Steve Bruce gets booed off. But you're right, it was a stinker of performance to serve up.
They were terrible. And Joel Linton is such. I mean, there he is. I mean, when Steve Bruce turned up, I forget which. With the audit with the Connies, that Steve Bruce turned up and then had to sort of go on a press conference and talk about Joel Linton, who, as you say, is this massive signing, an untested, untried young centre-forward that Steve Bruce clearly knew nothing about.
Yeah.
And he's his Newcastle number nine.
I don't think Steve even knows how to use YouTube on his phone, because otherwise he would have just had a quick flick through those. Okay,
it's just really weird.
I mean, look, as I said, it was almost shooting fish in a barrel for me to say the performance of the week's Manchester City, but I feel the same way about my worst performance of the week, and this does feel like kicking a stick away from a blind man, because Watford. Look, I'll fess up here. I thought Watford would be one of those teams banging their head off seventh place this year, looking to sort of break into this mythical top six. Three of whom, by the way, are mid table now. But I don't think you can go to Manchester City, any team, and concede eight without being consideration for one of the worst performances of the week. I mean, let's just say, first of all, Kike Sanchez-Flores, their manager, apparently told them before the start, look, this is a one-off game, treat it like a cup final. Presumably he's unaware of what happened the last time they were in a cup final with Manchester City.
Yeah.
And the players did. They treated it exactly like a cup final, except they added a couple more to it. Now, you're the one with the coaching badges. We keep turning to you for learned stuff here.
Please, tell us all, explain.
How can 11 players, even against a team as brilliant as Manchester City, what I see with Watford this year is you look at their 11 starters, they're all decent footballers, they're big and strong. But without Troy Deeney somehow as the glue, the mental glue for the team, they're just a load of individuals getting passed and cut to ribbons every game. Eight this time, but it's happened in several games this season.
When you're coming off of the back of the result at Arsenal, you should be now going into this game on a little bit of a high, a bit of an adrenaline rush, want to build on that performance because they should have beat Arsenal. Everyone, hands down, they should have won that game. Then probably
no
that
one
training
can beat Arsenal, you know that.
Well, on that occasion, they should have.
Ask Johnny Jackson, yes.
But on the build-up going into the Man City game, it should have been the focus of let's build on what we've just done on the Sunday.
Yeah.
But then when you see the lineup, the performance, you can tell that week has gone and had the adverse effect, where it's a case of we're going to take out all of our identified centre forwards and put a winger up top. We're going to give
a man with no pace or physical power. De La Feo's got a lot of skills and techers and all that, but he is not a
so you look
man
at that as your front line, you're thinking, well, what have we got? Then you're playing, is Guadalupe International for Chulias, I think, on the right hand side, debut, and you're looking thinking, where are we going with, like, you'll be looking
good
going,
luck with that one,
where are we
the
going
way
with this gaffer? That's the sort of mood you're going to be going into a game of.
I take it you've never lost a game by eight goals.
I haven't touched wood yet.
So, yeah. I presume you have lost by seven though. What goes on in the dressing room afterwards?
Is an inquest going on? I mean, it's not even, the inquest isn't happening in a change room after, the inquest is happening on a pitch throughout. I think you can see in any game of football, after every goal, there's always going to be an inquest, but there has to be a point, which obviously it didn't occur yesterday, where you've got to go and say, we've got to keep it as this. Now, when you think of what was probably being said or not said at half time, and you're 5-0 down, you can't come out and concede 3 minutes later. You think to yourself, well, what has the team talk been about? What has the manager actually said to those players in the change room for them to come out 3 minutes later?
To be fair, they were treating it like the cup final. They got to six. They should have stopped there, shouldn't they?
I mean, I think getting beat 4 or 5 by Man City is going to be a feather in most people's caps this year.
It's a bit of the norm.
And you go,
you've already got a couple of wallopings this year and you're really struggling at the bottom table. You can't go there and lose by
eight. It's the manner they scored, and then the manager's saying, well, my players look scared, was his way of dealing with that situation.
They're grown men. Now, I know... Spurs could very easily be in this list as well, since they haven't won an away game since your kids were still playing with their Christmas presents. But Jason, you very kindly have ignored the great power of North London because you want to talk about Everton's performance.
Very much so, more towards sort of Marco Silva.
Yeah,
I think he's been in the job now from the start of last season. He's had the opportunity to
build great hair.
Jace, you're much too young to know this. If anyone is looking, if they do a Christmas party of managers saying, guess what, lads? The theme this year at the pantomime is the original Star Trek series. We're looking for a Captain Kirk.
Yep.
Marco!
Yeah, I can't see beyond the fact that he looks great on the television. I mean, that can't make you a sort of career manager in the Premier League, can it?
When people talk about average lifespan of a manager these days, and he's gone to the level and even going close to passing that average lifespan, but there still hasn't been an achievement of any sort.
He starts well at so many places, doesn't he?
But then it goes the other way.
Now
is the money that he's had, he's trying to build a squad, but even with the players he's got in, you're looking at building a team which is really going to end up in a position with the quality of player that you've got there. And you're looking, thinking, how long, I'm not saying you want managers to get sacked, but I'd expected more from him, considering the talk, the way he's been talked about.
Let me ask you a question then, Jason. Given that he's had over a year in that job now, what kind of a team are Everton?
Very mediocre.
Well, how do they attempt to win the match? Are they a pressing team? Are they a counter-acting? I can't tell.
I'm saying that. I think we said it off air, where it's the identity. I don't know what their identity is.
No.
There is a way of playing which you see in spits and spurts, but it's not going to happen if you haven't got the players to play the way you want to play. And he's had the opportunity to actually go and get those players in.
And Mr. Mashiri's dough.
He's been back.
So he is, and you can look at that. And here's the thing, there's much talk about the fact that, since Lukaku, where's our number 9? Okay, so you've not got that obvious sort of like arguably 20 goals a season man. But you go through that lineup. They brought on Walker, Iwobi and Tosin. They also had on the field anyway, Moise Keane, who's going to get you. You've got Sigurdsson, Richarlison, who spent a load of money on. I'll tell you what, if you haven't got one man to score you 20 goals, you're not telling me that is not someone a lot of attacking force.
That can get you at least 8 to 10.
Amongst themselves.
Yeah. It doesn't look a great...
But as before, he had too many number 10s, now he's got too many wide players pretending to be strikers, and I don't think it's working out for them. Although I don't think they're the worst performance. I think we have to choose it between Newcastle and Watford. Watford, because they're just so pathetic, and Newcastle, because you cannot have less than 30% possession at home and expect not to hear the boos ringing around the 4/5 full stadium.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave this to you, Jason. You choose the worst performance of the week.
I have to go with Watford.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
I mean, 8-0 goals, in the Premier League. Pretty much, if you don't get it for 8 goals conceded, you never will.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is Talk Sport Daily.
A podcast to kickstart your day as we nail down the biggest talking points with plenty of punchy personality and opinion. Join us every weekday morning for big sporting stories and laughs wrapped into one big, fat, juicy podcast. Subscribe now to TalkSport Daily on Acast, Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
The Record Book.
Here's Maddison, 25 yards from goal, shooting and scoring! And scoring the winner! James Maddison scores for Leicester City! No one has tried as hard as him to score without success this season. But finally, Maddison has found his avenue to goal.
Burn, and it's worked back towards Stevens again. Driven towards the edge of the penalty area, flicked on by Gross. And here is Connolly, the youngster, who lobs it over the goalkeeper, Dubravka. And somehow it is cleared off the line by Fabian Schär. That's an incredible goal line clearance.
Guendouzi has got it back for Arsenal. The Frenchman running at angles. He goes over, and the penalty has been awarded. That was very positive, direct running into the penalty area by Guendouzi.
You're listening to The Record Book. Thank you very much to all of you who do listen to it. Increasing numbers every week, and we're rising up the charts like ABBA's latest single. There's one for teenagers. I'm Danny Kelly, alongside me, a man who remembers ABBA, Mark Webber.
Oh, dear.
And probably one of the men who doesn't remember them, Jason Yule, the former Charlton forwards, these days a greatly successful coach with Charlton and England's age group teams. We're on to our heroes of the week. And I'm going to start because too often heroes of the week are forward players doing various things. But my hero of the week is a combination of a player and an activity. And my hero is Fabian Schär of Newcastle. Let's be fair, they didn't have much to cheer at Newcastle, as we've already
this
heard.
This is so sweet of you, Dan.
This is true, though. It's true. I don't think we see enough defensive overhead kicks, right? Now, look, I speak as one who knows. When I played on Hackney Marshes many, many years ago at centre-half, I found myself becoming quite skilled at defensive overhead kicks because I was always the wrong side of the ball.
It's a last resort.
It's the only resort left for me.
If in doubt.
I was a much skinnier man in those days to launch myself into the air and boot the ball back over my own head. And you can, with a bit of practice, become particularly adept at it. You don't see it in professional football because people tend to be in the right place. But what you very rarely see is somebody perfecting that quite difficult athletic skill, the overhead kick, from directly underneath his own crossbar. And Fabian Schär, Brighton would have won the game if he hadn't run back to his goal. It's quite a tricky skill because he had to run, stop himself, and still, while the ball was actually making its progress and the old goal line technology was getting ready to bleep, to get the ball out from under the panel, out from under the post and the crossbar with that kick, I thought was deserving of a hero of the week. And you can give me any number of people beating six defenders and lamping into the top corner while the goalkeeper applauds. For me, as a former defender, it's Fabian Schär and his brilliant clearance of all Newcastle against Brighton. Jason, who's your hero? And if this is an Arsenal player,
what's the odds?
Yes, it is.
Funny that.
I was prompted by you two. No, Matteo Guendouzi for me. I think he's a player that is growing of age in the Arsenal shirt. And I said off air was, for someone so young that came into the club and started performing so well, and now he's looking like a player that actually cares about playing for Arsenal. It means something to him. I think there are other players that are just there. And
Without getting you in trouble at the PFA, I mean, I'll let you continue about Matteo Guendouzi in a second, but without getting you into trouble the next time you're at the PFA dinner, compare and contrast him with his midfield partner, Granit Xhaka.
Chalk and cheese. I think it's that. I think at least with Guendouzi, you can see him wearing the heart on his sleeve. I think with Xhaka, it's through the motions. I'm just going to try and get through this game. Hopefully, with staying on the pitch for most of it. I just think he's there. He's going to get booked.
He gets picked every week.
When we look at a player in terms of what does he offer the team, I'm still unsure what he does. Yes, he's got the armband. I don't think he offers leadership, because if you're someone who's having not so much of a great performance, then can you give me something else on the pitch which could be some leadership qualities? I don't see that. But I see a Guendouzi who's someone who's willing to put a foot in. Yes, he's still young and will make the wrong decision.
And I've got to say, Jase, on that note, when Arsenal started the season, it seemed to me that people were saying, well, this is a decent look at Arsenal side, but that Guendouzi is going to be the problem.
Yeah.
He looked like the spare part.
Yeah, he did at one point.
Their inability to see through Granit Xhaka.
Maybe it's because he's called Granit.
Yeah. Their inability to see through the granite.
If he was called Windows Xhaka,
Lupin Xhaka, people just cut him down. But look, I hate picking on one person, but I've seen enough of that lad over the years to know that he is not, I mean, the answer to Arsenal. But you're a coach. It drives me mad. Arsenal concede. I've got a small smile on my face, but I'm always looking at Xhaka's position when they concede. He's always on the edge of their penalty area, looking at the action. Yeah. If you're a midfield player, you've got to be facing.
You've got to be
play.
In there. You've got to be in the mix.
That's why I'm with this Grant.
Because his energy is amazing.
Never hides. No.
And like I said, he's someone that will get on the ball, will give it away. But is he not going to go and get? So the highlights last week at Watford, he's getting in and around the edge of his box. Yeah, it might have been a ploy that Watford were doing to put him on. But he still kept doing it. And I think that just sort of shows the type of character that he's now starting to build in terms of, I'm not going to be afraid. I'm not going to hide. And last week when he came off the pitch, they were winning 2-1.
And recently got a first cap for France in a midfield that's not short of footballers, by the way. I agree with you, Mark. At the start of the season, I thought he was only going to be selected to make David Luiz's hair look normal.
Exactly.
But it turns out that
so
I was
he's
wrong.
Man.
And he was very, very good today. Very, very good indeed. As was the Republic of Ireland's excellent new midfielder.
You should be so lucky.
James Maddison has not played a competitive game for England and has Irish antecedents and is qualified to play for the Republic of Ireland.
Almost the best story, by the way, on a similar note of the week, and I paraphrase because it's funnier if I do, is that Jack Grealish went for under-15 trials for England, banged his head on a sink, woke up, and he was a Republic of Ireland trialist. Now, there was a gap in between, of which involved him being taken away from the England camp, having to recover, and in the meantime becoming a Republic of Ireland player.
I have to say, though, for both Maddison and Grealish, if they were looking at their careers and want to play international football, the sight of Mason Mount and Phil Foden, on the slipway for England, you've no doubt been around both these players, one of those boys is going to end up getting one cap.
Well, here's my thing about James
Maddison and Grealish.
Exactly right. And here's my thing about James Maddison. The best English number 10 we've got at the moment, and not least of which he wears 10. Now, there are younger players than Phil Foden and Mason Mount, of course, because they've come through that English ranks. And that's great news because I like the English ranks. You mentioned it earlier, Dan. The unders is a wonderful thing and it's very exciting.
Absolutely.
As an England fan. Mm-hmm. But James Maddison's kind of done it the slightly harder way. He just got bought out the Championship and said, come on, be an impressive Premier League footballer. Excuse me.
But it's the second time he's done it because he was bought from Coventry.
To Norwich.
Established himself. He's had to make two leaps.
Being bought from Coventry, but in his kind of career coming towards something like a bit of a sort of like a crossroads. So he does that. Then this week, he's wearing 10 all the time. So he's a 10, and I love a 10. And he looks like a 10. This week, all he's done is get photographed with Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
Walk into work with a transparent Louis Vuitton $6,500 backpack on.
Ferguson wouldn't put up with that.
Get mocked mercilessly for it.
Yeah.
Leaves the ground with said backpack on, see-through as I mentioned, with his Man of the Match of the award in it. Yeah. Do me a favour. That is class.
As long as he hasn't made that parting in his hair any wider, because that is weird how wide the gap is.
Time will widen that parting.
Yes, I know. But
on all of us.
Yeah. Well, you're doing all right.
Time is a great parter.
You're doing very well indeed. Okay, so James Maddison, Fabian Scher, and Matteo Guendouzi. I'm going to let you have the first word here, Mark, because I don't push my considerable weight around too much.
Well, it's me. I'm going James Maddison, mm-hmm. because basically he's that good. He's worthy of his England call up. He was excellent in the game. He scored a great goal. And I swear to God, who amongst us would not sport a Louis Vuitton bag for $6,500, even though you could see your sandwiches and your Oyster card and a note from your mum in it? Yep. Because it's a see-through bag. But we'd all do it, wouldn't we?
And all your losing betting slips down the bottom as well. Are you happy with that?
As I'd love to go Guendouzi, I agree with Mark on Maddison. I mean, I've seen him from when he was a young player at Coventry, playing in the 23s as a young player, then getting bought to Norwich, sent on loan to Aberdeen and so on and so forth. But just, we spoke about Dele Alli, Lingard, number 10s, numbers game. His numbers stack up. He's creating chances. He's actually getting assists for goals and scoring goals. So for me, that is performance for me.
Okay, I have to accept it. It's a democracy. I will say this. The last defender, thank God for Virgil van Dijk. Otherwise, the last defender to win a major award was back in the day. Cafu, who was the best player in the world for about 5 years, never won any awards because he was a defender. Sorry, Fabian Scher. I did my best for the defensive community there, but apparently that's not good enough.
The Record Book.
But the big talking point will be the few words between Mings and El Ghazi, the teammates. They had words. The cross wasn't stopped by El Ghazi. He was unhappy, Mings, and he told him so. They come together, put their heads together as well, and the referee had to stop the game and have a very strong word with them. Aston Villa 0, West Ham 0.
I think they're VAR.
The VAR.
This is tight.
Is looking at that Son decision, and it looks like it may well be... Well, it's fractions. I mean, it's millimetres. He's either on or he's offside. I can't even tell with the lines and everything that's on the monitor. The goal is being checked by the VAR. They're just looking at whether or not Son was on or offside. I've got a feeling they're going to rule out this goal.
I'm delighted to say it's time for one of my favourite parts, really, when we pick our villain of the week. Jason, you might as well continue your Arsenal-themed show.
And it's like a love-hate thing, isn't it?
No. We're really enjoying your performance.
You clearly need to get it out there, Jason, so share.
The player you're going to pick for Villain of the Week, it's not really for his performance, though he's had some shockers as well at the back for Arsenal over recent...
It's a package deal.
But Sokratis and his... how can I put this? His attempt to influence the referee.
Wow.
It's a strange one in... why he did what he did, and
it's everything that he does,
but
in this instance,
it looks like he's being accidentally or on purposely stepped on the fire. The player's reaction who's doing it is his hands are up then down and hits his own fires, and his fingernail flicks Socrates in his head and delay happens, and then he's hand in face, rolling along the ground.
Clutching his noggin,
but I'm
like
looking,
he's been beaten around it with a stave.
Yeah, but I'm looking at, well, it actually looks like the foot on the fire is actually doing more pain to what the little fingernail in the head.
The feigning of injury is the most pathetic thing that any footballer can ever do.
Hate is a strong word, but I hate red-blooded men
in a competitive situation.
But when centre-halves who go around sticking their chest out saying, come on then, when they do it, it looks worse still.
It is, and I think it's really, it's one of those ones, he should be in the change room and be getting told about himself by the players, because it's just rubbish.
Can you imagine what Roy Keane would have said to him?
I wouldn't want to think that now, really.
He's a strange one, Socrates. I mean, you could all, when he clears the ball, he almost high-fives himself. He's so involved in himself that I can almost understand why he the over-dramatic reaction to being thigh muscled. Yeah. That's all it said. First of all, he looked like he was stroking against him like he was his pet cat. It started, and then all of a sudden, he's had his kind of like whiplash from the man just flexing his leg muscle.
I mean, if you
want to,
in order to keep that up, the whole thing, he has to leave the ground in one of those lampshades that dogs wear after they've had an operation. He really was hurt, the fella, but he hasn't. He's slunk out as embarrassed as he really should be. So that's one defender lined up for the villain of the week. You want to take us back to the start of this week, Mark?
I do, because I was so excited by it, and so pleased Jason's here because he can fill us in on this, because he may have been in and around this situation. Monday night, Aston Villa, West Ham. El Ghazi. Now, as far as I can tell, on the original Smiley Culture record, Cockney translation, El Ghazi is the geezer. I'm sure that's literally what his name translates as. But not so well when you go up to Tyrone Mings, when Tyrone Mings has basically just said to you, any fear of you tracking back and helping out as a defender here? And little El Ghazi goes up to big Tyrone Mings and puts his face in Tyrone Mings' face. The restraint that Tyrone Mings has got to show in that situation. And how can a teammate put his teammate in such a precarious position? So because we all know where that was. If that's an opposition player, you're off. Forward has touched forward.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's one of the, VAR got brought into it as well to see if there was
they
the contact
well,
and the intent
yes.
and things like that. Now, if it's one of those ones, we don't know in terms of the view where they're thinking, well, we could actually send him off here, but do we want to do that? Hold on a minute. Two players on the same team, they're either going to go, we need to send one of them off. Then all of a sudden it becomes more of a farce. But you've got to be looking at, well, what's led you to get to the point where you've got to go into your fellow teammate's face and be the way that you are? Now, like you said, the restraint of Tyrone Mings, brilliant, but be restraintful there.
Because there was
but
a time when Tyrone would just stamped on him, wouldn't he?
allegedly. But then it's like I said, the restraint was there, but then it's get back in the change room, get it out and deal with it.
I was going to ask you.
That, don't do that to me on the pitch in front of everyone here.
Tyrone Mings, he's tucked that away for later, isn't he? Surely.
Without a doubt. Yeah. But it shouldn't have been done.
It's appalling.
It is.
My villain of the week is the offside law. Now, I really
get out
wish,
of town, Dave.
No, I am mad. I'm mad for VAR. I think it's going to help us in the long term. And I wish this hadn't been Spurs, because people will say it's biased. But what happened to Son Heung-min at the weekend just goes to show. I did say, while campaigning vociferously for the introduction of technology to help the officials, eventually to replace the officials, I did say that they'd have to be careful here because football is so blinking lazy. Anyone with a brain in their head, particularly anyone who saw it happen in American football 20 years ago, but if you bring in 360-degree cameras and 21 cameras all capable of covering the thing, and slow motion and ultra-slow motion, you will start to see things that the law was not designed to see. The offside law was to stop Victorian goal hangers from hanging about the penalty area and making the game into a farce.
With a pipe on. Quite literally, wearing
bathing costumes and with a pipe on. That was to stop them. I don't think it was to stop forwards from making brilliantly timed runs and being caught out by a technology that cannot tell when the ball was kicked forward exactly enough, which isn't in line with the play. Now, Son Heung-min's feet were behind those of his markers. His torso was level, but his shoulder, and if the ball had gone off his shoulder, it would be a VAR about handball, was ahead of it. It strikes me that we're in a situation now where if the wind catches your shirt and blows it ahead of an opponent, that is liable
could,
to render
could
you
easily,
offside.
Could easily do you. I'm with you, Dan. I believe that it's absolutely because it's not so long ago where the cry from everywhere was, technology can't come in quickly enough for appalling decision-making. Well, that cry seems to have been sort of lost in the annals of time, i.e. 18 months ago. But it's quite simple, I think, for me, is that the technology is going to be to our advantage, but if the technology can't match up to it yet, then you've got to have some latitude. And the latitude is the fact that you're exactly right. There is a grey area where they cannot make a definitive line on offside, so you have to create a bit more room.
And this is where the referees... Sorry, Jason, I'll come back to you. This is where the referees made a rod for Owen back. In order to try and retain some power, they said, well, one thing we'll be able to do is offside, because that's definitive.
That's simple.
Black or white.
Black or white, yeah. Binary.
And it is not. It is just not, because if a football could be kicked with just the tip of your toe and bounced off straight away, then you could tell when the exact moment the ball was kicked. We cannot, because the foot enters the ball.
It compresses. It
compresses. And there is a timing thing here, and I think until we have perfect technology, which may never come, you can't be disallowing goals like that, because football will be the loser, and that means the crowds will be the loser, and particularly when it can't see what it's even been disallowed for, they're ultra losers. I mean, you must teach kids to play on the shoulder. It's one of the great skills in football, to see where the ball is, see your defender, get yourself level, make the move happen. But now they're frightened, and they're going to be caught.
No, because I'm not having it one bit millimeters in terms of the difference of a goal or a goal standing or not standing. Then you've also got the bit of at what phase of the play can you bring back the offside? And you think to yourself, it's gone, it's happened. Millimetres, no. And as you mentioned there about timing of the runs, it is an art to time your run and being able to do it, how you do it, at what speed you do it at, because there are still some players out there that are still timing of their runs, or lack of, are still running like space cadets.
Yeah.
But it is an art in terms of how you do it.
But I'll tell you what's impossible to do.
How high, how low you are.
And it doesn't matter how much of a genius you are. You cannot be a brilliant man at judging that and beat that technology. Because as Dan points out, it's physically impossible for that rule to apply to real life.
Exactly. Because we're always saying now the game is getting quicker, faster. How many times do you see where a linesman could not be up with play? So, yes, we're having to get the aid with us.
Even if they are up with play, you see the defenders coming out, the forwards going in at such pace.
And the crossover is going to be at a where it's like, oof, not too sure. So they always just say with the official, what do you call them now?
Linesmen. Referees.
Linesmen. It's,
you do this for a living, Chase. Don't mind us.
Linesmen, it's all women.
sorry, my bad. No, it's one of those where they said, if the benefit of the doubt, let it go. Because they're saying is you have to be sure in terms of the decision. You can't gamble. You can't guess. If you're unsure, leave it. And now we're getting assistance. But the assistance we need is not for a millimetre in terms of he is offside. And it's going to be the top part of his shoulder, which he can score from or stroke can't score from. It's ridiculous.
And all of that 30 yards from goal.
Yeah.
By the way.
Exactly. Yeah. So again, what phase is it they're going to bring it back to this?
Game
offside?
Is too much fun, too important, too big in people's lives for it to be reduced to some kind of scientific exploration done with a scalpel. I'm sorry, that's just not it. And much as I want the embarrassment of Socrates to include villain of the week, and much as I think El Ghazi deserves it for putting his teammate in an absolute bind. Please tell me, surely the offside, the way the offside was being interpreted by VAR, and of course, the player, oddly enough and wonderfully, who would have most suffered from this over the last 5 years is Jamie VARD.
yes!
He would definitely have been the player that would have been most affected by, let me have this, please, as the
so
villain
yours.
Of the week.
So yours.
No, I agree with, totally agree with.
Oh, that's so all my other defeats in the earlier rounds now mean nothing to me, because that's the one I wanted again. And I don't care that it was a Spurs player. If it happened to a Leicester player, I'd have had exactly the same opinion. I'm a great fan of VAR, but you can't make it into a farce. And I sometimes think that the referees, almost as a means of fighting back from the loss of power, are choosing BS offside decisions to try and discredit VAR. Well, mates, it won't work. We'll stay strong. You'll soon be consigned to the dustbin of memory. You're listening and have been listening to Mark Webster, Jason Yule, and me, Danny Kelly, on Game Day, the Record Book podcast. We love that you're along for the ride. Join us again next week. We'll have more similarly award-winning stuff for you.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides?
We've got them. Expert opinions. We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.